You're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast, changing up the way Bears fans stay up to date on their favorite team since 2015. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Chicago Audible, and welcome to our Week 3 Monday Night Football postgame show. As the Bears began this game with a bang on offense and on defense, and even though they made it much closer than we wanted in the second half, the Bears were still able to snag their second win of the season as they took down Washington 31-15. Now, of course, I'm your host, Will DeWitt, and to help me break down this primetime victory is our site writer, Nick Austin, who's making his podcast debut. Nick, I know that you're excited to make your debut on the podcast. You also had your interview with ESPN earlier today. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, my man. I'm very excited to be on, and I'm glad that I didn't jinx our Bears at halftime with that tweet talking about the pod.
Yeah, someone was like, no, don't jinx it, guys. And I was like, I think we're safe. And then things kind of went a little scary. But yeah, definitely glad you didn't, because if so, I would have just had to boot you. And I would have to do this podcast solo. So I'm
solo
glad.
Exactly.
And I hate those. So I'm glad we're able to work this out. So let's go ahead. I'm excited to have you on. But let's jump into the first quarter of our show. And we have to begin with my monster moment of the game. And I had one, and I thought I was going to stick with it all game long, but it actually changed here about halfway through the fourth quarter. My monster moment is going to be Danny Trevathan's forced fumble on that quarterback sneak midway through the fourth. Washington, at that point, they have scored 15 unanswered points. They're knocking on the door. They're in the red zone again. I believe they're on like the 16-yard line. It was a fourth and inches. It was a smart play by Danny Trevathan to go over the top, knock out that football. Eddie Jackson, Mr. Opportunity, right there, is able to recover it. Because for me, the reason why this is my monster moment, because it felt like if the Bears allow that fourth down, allow Washington into the end zone, it just felt like the Bears were going to find a way to shoot themselves in the foot and blow this victory. That play by Danny Trevathan may as well have saved the day. So for that reason, that's going to be my monster moment of the game. And over to Nick, which usually this is the Moriano Minute, but you didn't want it to be the Moriano Minute. This is going to be the Nick of Time. So what's going to be your Nick of Time?
So very similar to you. It involves Trevathan. It's got to focus on the Bears' linebacking core as a whole, especially Khalil Mack and Danny Trevathan, the two veterans. Mack, no surprise, got things going. He had two sacks, two forced fumbles, first time he's ever done that in a single game. And, of course, he helped alleviate pressure off some of the other guys. Like Akeem Hicks was able to provide two to three pressures early. Danny Trevathan, of course, got his sack. And then, as you mentioned, yeah, I think that completely saved the game because the Bears are doing everything they could to do what they did last week and nearly blow a win. This felt like they had it under control. Redskins are a terribly unbalanced team. Bears are loaded on defense. But without that opportunity and those five takeaways, I think the Bears would be staring at 1-2 and in a big hole in the NFC North. So my focus is the Bears linebacking core and specifically those two veterans.
Excellent stuff there, Nick. This leads into my stat of the game, and we're going back and forth. I like this. This is some good teamwork because mine's going to be those Bears turnovers. But I'm looking at the first half especially here. I said the game's going to be the three turnovers by the defense in the first half, but more importantly, the 21 points scored off of those because obviously when you get turnovers or takeaways, if you don't find a way to capitalize, good things usually don't happen, but the Bears were able to capitalize on those opportunities. And of course, anytime you can score 21 points off of turnovers, I mean, that just puts yourself in a prime position to come away with that victory. So for me, the stat of the game, three turnovers by the defense in the first half and the 21 points scored off of those. All right, Nick, I want to go back to you in this new segment of the show that we're doing this season. It's called the Midway Mulligan, and it's a time of the game or a moment of the game that you wish you can take back for any reason whatsoever. So what's going to be your Midway Mulligan here after this Monday night win?
So I think this would probably be the answer for a lot of people, and I would have to go with that Mitch Trubisky interception. I mean, Nagy made things very easy for him with some, you know, QB-friendly play calling, especially in the first 2.5 quarters. But with that throw, he kind of resorted back to that, you know, early 2018, early this season type of play. It's not a throw that needs to be made. It's a terribly underthrown ball, and quite simply, the defense had to bail him out again tonight. His numbers look good. He made some nice throws, especially on the run, but that throw, especially when they're so close to scoring, could have cost them, and again, it nearly did tonight. So it'd be that Trubisky interception, both for the cause and also the lack in his development making that play and throwing it so poorly.
Yeah, I think, like you said, most people would agree with you with that assessment. I definitely am right there with you. But it's time to kind of figure out who's going to be our MVPs of this game, and I'll go ahead and begin. I'm going to go with Turbo, Taylor Gabriel, 6 catches, 75 yards with 3 touchdowns all in that second quarter. He's the first Bear wide receiver ever with 3 receiving touchdowns in the first half of a game. Obviously, I don't know the stats here, but I'm curious if he's the first Bears wide receiver ever with 3 receiving touchdowns in a single quarter. But regardless of how you want to splice that up, Taylor Gabriel coming in clutch here, and of course, credit to Matt Nagy for the play calling down near, you know, the goal line, those two situations. But then the most impressive catch, that 36-yarder on a long third down. Mitch threw a dime, but it was up to Gabriel to hold on that football, the concentration, his awareness to get both feet in bounds. It was close. And obviously, that thing, they had to go to a review in order to even get that touchdown. But for me, my most viable Bear of the game is going to be Turbo. What about you, Nick? Which direction are you going to go for MVP?
And as you said, that was incredibly close. A beautiful throw by Trubisky as well. Similar to my nick of time, I'm going to go with Danny Trevathan. He was second on the team in tackles with 8, 7 solo. He had the sack, a tackle for loss, and, of course, the forced fumble that saved the game, in addition to, you know, his always valuable leadership and just flying around the field. He could have been a little more perfect. He had an offsides penalty on him with encroachment. That's something the Bears could have cleaned up, but I really liked his play tonight, and Bears were able to rely on him for the most part as well.
Awesome. Good stuff there. Now, before we enter the second quarter of our show, we do need to call a quick timeout to tell you a little bit about our show sponsor, SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing sites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there is a better way. They built the fastest way to find tickets so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. So why is SeatGeek better than the rest? That's a great question. To put it as simply as possible, SeatGeek is a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. It rates each on a scale of 1 to 10. And finally, SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map. And of course, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. All of us here at the Chicago Audible have the SeatGeek app on our phone, and by far the easiest way that we've been able to shop for tickets throughout the years. Earlier today, I was looking at the Bears-Chiefs game, the game we're going to. Still plenty of amazing deals left if you're looking at joining us later on here in the season. And here's the kicker. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first purchase, and all you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code BEARS for $10 off your first purchase. That promo code again is BEARS, B-E-A-R-S, for $10 off your first purchase on SeatGeek. All right, welcome back. You're listening to Chicago Audible. I'm Russell DeWitt. I'm joined by my, well, co-host Nick, which if I said that, no one else would know the difference. But obviously, this is Nick number 2 on the show. And of course, this is our Bears Washington post-game show here late on a Monday night, 26 minutes away from my Tuesday morning. But it's time to go ahead and kick off our second quarter of the show and talk about the Chicago Bears offense. And obviously, there's lots to talk about here today in terms of the offense. But Nick, I'd like to go over to you first here. In terms of the Bears offense, what was perhaps your biggest takeaway of the entire game?
Of the entire game, we mentioned that it, you know, it faded a little bit late, but I would probably go with Nagy's play calling. I mean, we agreed and we've talked how it was terrible in game one against Green Bay. You know, it wasn't as good as it should have been in Denver. But I think that that was definite positive tonight. He made things easy for Trubisky, both with audibles at the line, RPOs, easy out action to players like Taylor Gabriel, Tariq Cohen, and then even just easy passing plays to get things going for Mitch Trubisky, especially on those first two touchdowns for Gabriel. One of them, Trubisky didn't even see Gabriel there. The play was a little too easy for him, but I think that was a big plus. And then finally, utilizing Montgomery late to run the clock. I mean, they drafted him for a reason. We were all excited about that pick. I know Nick was hoping the Bears took him, and finally they rode him, as they should. He keeps things going. Good ball protection so far, and really kept the legs pumping and the time running down. So I was pretty impressed, at least for 80% of the game, with Nagy's play calling tonight, Will.
Yeah, same here, especially in the first half on third down. The Bears were 6 of 8 on third down in that first half. The only two that they failed, one was a 3rd and 19. That was a drive that the Bears obviously just shot themselves in the foot for multiple reasons. And then afterwards, they also failed on a 3rd and 9. There's a sack to end that drive, but the rest of that was a 3rd and 2, a 3rd and 4, a 2 and 8, a 2, which shows you, A, you're keeping that offense in 3rd and manageable. And then, of course, the last one of the half, 3rd and 17, Mitch was able to evade the pressure and a touchdown to Turbo along the right sideline. But overall, I thought Nagy did a good job, and he did a decent job at calling plays that really helped out Mitch in this game. Nick, do you want to take us into some of those? Like, how was Matt Nagy, in terms of his play calling, able to set up Mitch for some of that success that he had?
Well, like you mentioned, very make things easy for him. So a couple of those third downs, I believe, were RPO. So it gave Mitch the chance to kind of scan the defense, get things going, attract some more attention to players like Montgomery and Tariq early on. And then also plays where he could roll out, use his legs a little bit. And especially on one of those two, Taylor Gabriel on the left side, he showed that's one of the most impressive things he was able to do at UNC. Show that athleticism, his skill to be able to throw on the run. And finally, he wasn't perfect. You know, I mentioned the turnover, but just simply plays that allow Mitch to showcase what he actually can do. So that was big. And, you know, props to Trubisky. In the first half, he was 7 for 7 on third downs for 101 yards and a touchdown. And that was obviously when they were at their best. And that's going to be a huge thing, not only for his development, for this team, because a key to the Bears' total success is the pass rush. And when they're not able to get those breaks on the sidelines and the offense is having quick drives, that's going to kill them. So that was huge, both on Coach Nagy and Mitch's arms and legs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And on top of that, you talked about Mitch being able to throw on the run, and you talked about his ability on third down, which goes back to my original point, the 7 for 7. He also had 158.3, which is a perfect passer rating on third down in the first half. So that's something that hopefully he can build off of. But in the second half, I do want to kind of talk about that a little bit, because especially in the third quarter, the Bears offense did what they've been doing in the first 2 weeks, and it's having a hard time mounting any sort of serious drive in the second half of games, and their defense is tired, they're getting gassed, you're losing guys like an Akeem Hicks, and it's like, oh boy, like you're really getting tested here. And I believe there were two drives in that third quarter that the Bears had for less than 2 minutes, or about 2.5 minutes, which when you're doing that and you're putting that defense right back out there after they're giving up long drives, they're gassed, they're tired. I mean, I talked about this in length in the postgame show last week, but what do you believe some of those issues are? For me, it comes back to some of the play calling, because I believe like one of the first drives of the second half, it was like a play to Patterson in the backfield, another run to Cohen, and then you try to pass on third and long. And that's not working. That's a game, like when you're already up by as much as you were, that's when I wanted to see David Montgomery get interjected into his offense just a little bit sooner. Now, with there's only 4 minutes left in the game, the Bears did a great job of, you know, leaning on him. But I thought that could have happened a little bit sooner in this one. And I believe Montgomery only had 3 carries in the first half alone, which is still, yep, even though Mitch was in a rhythm, you still want to see him get a few more touches than that. So what's your take on the Bears' inability to find a lot of success in the second half?
Well, I think a huge part of it is kind of the, I guess, the lack of balance. I mean, like you said, Trubisky was on in the first half, but I believe he threw 22 or 23 passes. That's a lot for somebody that's still a young quarterback that is supposed to have this running back that they can lean on. So then if you know, okay, we'll try a run on first down, that doesn't work, incompletion on second, then you're looking at third and long, which is kind of what you just mentioned that I believe led to that missed field goal that we talked about. Another drive, you know, it was hindered by the interception. So I think a huge part of it is the play calling, which wasn't quite as good in the second half, and also just the lack of execution. I mean, I think that the Bears missed Bobby Massey tonight. I think that they had a couple awful penalties, holding, false start, what have you. I mean, it certainly wasn't a perfect game. And then just the fact that Mitch isn't quite able to do it all on his own, as you can see guys like Rodgers and Mahomes doing. I mean, he needs Nagy in his ear at the line. He needs those pretty simple route patterns. And I think they could have used a couple more screen opportunities for Montgomery as well. Handoffs are obvious, but you got to get your playmakers the ball. They did that with Tariq tonight. I think they need to do it with Montgomery more. And that showed in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, really good points there, Nick. And on top of that, going back to Mitch in his first half, the 20 completions that he had were a career high. So, you know, kudos for him for that. But like you said, there are some other issues in terms of play calling. Like I believe you said it about 10 minutes ago, right? 80% of the play calling you're pretty, you know, satisfied with. But there's still that 20% where you hope that Coach Nagy can kind of look at it and figure out what he would do differently next time. And I think he did a good job today, especially mitigating the damage from a Bobby Massey being out. He missed the game due to vertigo, of all things, today, which never knew he dealt with that. But hopefully that's a one-time thing this week, and he can move on forward better. But obviously, you and I, we were having a chat before this game started. Bobby Massey not playing was a shock to everyone, if you're paying attention to this team. Did you think that the impact overall was pretty limited? I thought so. I thought that would have been a much bigger impact in this game. I thought early on, Cornelius Lucas, who took over, was a little rusty, but after a while, he kind of got his game feet under him, and the Bears did a good job of some play calling to kind of make sure that Lucas didn't ruin all of our hopes tonight.
I was just going to say, I think that was a big help after, you know, he got settled in. I think some of the quick play calls, that's good for Trubisky and for the line tonight. I think Shaheen on the right side helped him as well. So I would agree. It was certainly less than we, you know, kind of were afraid of, because we knew with Washington's defense, this was an opportunity for Trubisky to have a good game. And then you see that, you know, about an hour before kickoff, and you wonder. So I definitely think that it was more limited than it could have been. And, you know, kudos to the rest of the line, especially that left side, and Coach Nagy for holding things together.
Now, real quick segue. I see that Nicholas Moriano has entered our live chat here on YouTube. I'm sure he's either just got home or still on the train. I don't know. I don't keep up with him in terms of those regards. But he did text me, and he's like, you better tell everyone that my bold prediction came true. He did have a bold prediction that Clinton Dix would have two interceptions. And I believe he said one of them is going to be a pick six. If I took it one step too far, Nick, you can correct me in the chat. But I'm giving you more props, so maybe you could just be quiet on it. But just wanted to say it now before I forget and I get reprimanded after this show. But getting back to the Bears offense, we've been talking about Mitch a lot, which is understandable. I think that's still one of the biggest topics right now in Chicago in terms of this offense. We talked about some of the things he did good, and a lot of it was the offense setting him up for success. But I do want to know, Nick, if you want to be critical, what are some things that you wanted to still see Mitch improve on? Because I'm looking at that first half and, you know, 20 of 23, but all those were just a few of those incompletions were throws that he could have had, and they're just missed opportunities. He's missing some of those easy throws. There's one to Anthony Miller along the left sideline. There's just a couple in my mind, but what do you still want to see Mitch kind of work on, clean up after this game?
Exactly. That was one of the throws that I was going to mention, that Anthony Miller. I mean, one good thing with Nagy's play calling is obviously it makes it easier for Trubisky, but on missed throws, it makes him a little more obvious, because you see that these receivers are so wide open, and either he's just, you know, so young and not used to it, or he gets too excited, which a lot of quarterbacks do, and he simply overthrows them. There was the one to Miller. I think there was another one to Gabriel. I mean, he could have had only one incompletion in the first half, and just some of his decision-making when he just tries to, you know, force things and it's not quite as crisp as it should be, I think that's a huge thing that he needs to work on, because you can't count on the defense to get five takeaways every game.
No,
you simply can't. So I think that it's his accuracy, his decision making, and even to trust his legs sometimes, because we've seen, you know, what he can do with that. And that's better than taking a sack, you know, doing things like that or just a simple throwaway. So overall, I'd probably give him about a B plus. But yeah, I think there are certainly things that he can work on as well.
I'm still looking at those throwing mechanics too. There's an overthrow that he had on to the right side, and it was just completely flat-footed, and that, which reminds me a lot of a Rex Grossman, you know, just trusting all that arm strength and to force it in there, and just, the ball just sailed on him. So he needs to continue. He had a pocket too. He could have stepped up and made that throw. And so for me, just making sure that he's consistently, you know, using his mechanics, utilizing his footwork. Those are things that he still needs to do, because when you're sitting there flat-footed, you're just not going to have, you know, the best kind of angle on that football, which kind of showed, and which is the reason why he was able to miss that ball. I do want to kind of talk about some of the receivers today, because obviously Allen Robinson, 6 catches, 60 yards today. Not his biggest game, but he did have some crucial catches, especially on third down today. What did you see out of Allen Robinson? Because I was seeing some elements of his game that I've been waiting for, because it seems like in Chicago they've been utilizing him a lot along the sidelines, and today they brought him into the middle of the field where he was able to make a lot of his damage. And I hope that they see this and continue to do it, because Allen Robinson running slants, running dig routes, these are the things that can really make some easy throws for Trubisky. What do you believe, Nick?
Exactly. And it's been so good to see. You know, he still needs to get that touchdown, but exactly, being toward the middle of the field, he demonstrated more of his route running ability, which he did in Jacksonville. And that kind of puts him toward, you know, not quite the top of the league, but some of those better receivers. He's got the size. He's got great hands. And when he's able to hit those routes both inside and outside, help a guy like Trubisky on those quick slants, I mean, that's huge. I wrote that down. Also the slant to Miller. So things like that help Trubisky. And, yeah, I think when Robinson's able to showcase that, you know, he can catch and be that security blanket for things when Trubisky doesn't have all day and just needs to pick up, you know, 4 or 5 yards on third down, that's huge. And I think we're finally seeing what Chicago hoped for in Allen Robinson as that number one receiver. And things will come. There are a lot of guys that are talented and, you know, deserve to get the ball. It was great to see that performance from Turbo and even some more production from Anthony Miller and Trey Burton tonight. But once Robinson can become that red zone target as well, watch out, because that's what the Bears offense was hoping for coming into 2019.
Now, we already talked about Taylor Gabriel on the top of the show. I did want to kind of go down here. Trey Burton today, he caught all 4 of his targets for 20 yards. Obviously, that's not an overly impressive stat line for a tight end, but I believe that he looked more comfortable, more fluid. He looks healthy out there. It's becoming the Trey Burton that we were accustomed to in the first half of last season. What did you see out of Trey Burton that gives you confidence moving forward that his role in this offense is going to continue to evolve and grow more along the lines that we saw, you know, in 2018?
Exactly. I mean, quite simply, he looks more like himself and not a guy that's just returning to the field and getting used to the reps and the rotation at tight end. He was able to gain a little separation, albeit not, you know, extremely long routes and a lot of yards. And he's also just, you know, down the middle, able to get those balls from Trubisky. And that's huge. I mean, if you're able to have production in the backfield, inside and outside, with Nagy's play calling ability, that just simply opens things up for the offense.
Now, I do have a hot, not really hot take, I'll call it a lukewarm take here, but Mike Davis, I think he had 1 carry today, and I believe that was his only offensive snap. He is someone that, ever since week 1, his role has gotten diminished and, you know, taken away from, which I think we all want to see more David Montgomery, so I'm not going to complain here, but are you surprised by Mike Davis's lack of a role today?
I am a little bit. I really liked that signing, and I think that, you know, all 3 or all 4 backs, if you include, you know, CP in that rotation, are able to add different things. So I would have liked, you know, maybe a Davis carry on 1st and 10, or an addition and 3rd and long when you have multiple backs out there, because I like what he can do. You know, he's not anything Pro Bowl level, but he can do a lot of things well, both in pass pro and as a catcher out of the backfield. So I was a little surprised, especially because exactly that 1 play, you know, of course he's getting the ball. So to add him to the rotation and just be able to do more things with the backfield, I think would be a great thing.
Now, sticking with the backfield, I'm looking at Tariq Cohen here, and it's yet another week where the Bears are having a hard time getting him going. And A, in general, I mean, he's only had, let me look here at the stats, he had 26 yards through the air, negative 2 in the ground to 24 on the day. So Tariq Cohen's still having a hard time get going, especially as a runner. 4 carries for negative 2 yards. Do you see anything that they're doing wrong there? Is it just not executing? Are the play calls a miss? Like, obviously we're expecting more out of Tariq Cohen than 24 yards on the whole entire, you know, night.
I think part of it is play calling, because a couple of those were inside runs, and with a guy his size, and if the run protection's not perfect or there aren't big holes, you're not likely going to gain a lot of traction there. So I think a couple could have been more misdirection or to the outside. And also it doesn't help when, you know, he gets it and he's about at the line of scrimmage and then he runs 3 yards, you know, in the backfield and then is able to be chased by some speed on the defense. So mm-hmm. I think it's a combination of things. Obviously, he's electric when he has the ball. And, you know, kind of as I keep alluding to, it's not going to happen overnight. I think that the offense is progressing, which is big to see. And there's just a lot of talent that needs to be able to get the ball and produce. So it's going to take time. I was happy to see him at least get more touches tonight to be a focal point, especially early on. And if they can feature him, you know, to the right side in the backfield or as a slot, I think that will do wonders for him. But I think they're headed in the right direction with Tariq.
Only 16 yards for him rushing through 3 games. That's alarming, at least to me. I mean, like you said, there's plenty of time for it to work itself out. But when I only see 16 yards from one of the most, if not the most dynamic player on our offense, Cordero Patterson has lapped him in terms of rushing yards so far this season. And that's, to me, a little worrisome. Hopefully that is something that the Bears can work out. And again, even if they want to phase him out as a running back and turn him into more of that receiver or someone who can take a lot of running back screens, so be it. That's fine. But I do believe he's proven in the past that, if you know, he can be an effective runner. So to me, I'm a little worried at this point of the season, but I'm not going to hit the panic button quite yet. Nick, I want to go over to you. Any final thoughts about this offense? Anything that you want them to work on as a whole moving forward? I think offensive line still has plenty of work ahead for it. Guys like James Daniels, Kyle Long, they're still continuing to not play to the standard that, you know, we're really accustomed to. And I'm starting to wonder if that center switch between Cody Whitehair and James Daniel is starting to become some of a factor here, or maybe it has been the entire time. It's something that looked fluid in training camp. It didn't seem like an issue in training camp, and in preseason, we didn't get to see it at all. And we're 3 weeks in, and I'm like, this isn't, like, it's the same starting five. We didn't have that today. But they just don't feel like the same unit, which to me is a little strange.
Well, I'd like to hit on a couple things there. I guess first, you mentioned Tariq's rushing yards. You know I'm more of an optimist, but if we look at the numbers for the entire offense, then honestly, I think most of them would be negative. So I'm just trying to look at the record being 2-1, some progression there, and there are a lot of guys that need to touch the ball. In addition, the offensive line, yeah, that switch has not looked positive at all, and I would like to see more production from guys like Anthony Miller and even Juice Wims. I mean, we all had guys and eyes at training camp, and he looked like he could be a major part of this offense, and he really hasn't done much. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. there's a lot of personnel that needs to, like I said, get the ball and, you know, likely be happy and produce in this offense. But basically, I think it's simply to clean things up, because the penalties will add up and hurt this team, especially against more quality opponents. I mean, this offense isn't anything special, whereas, oh, you can just deal with the penalties and, you know, have a guy like Mahomes create a big play or something like that. So I think it's a lot of cleaning up and simply working on that execution, especially on the interior of the line. And some wide receivers as well. I mean, just getting more guys the ball. And that's something that Mitchell need to work on too.
Yeah, good call. And the offensive line, like I said earlier in the show, they were shaky to kind of start this game, but then they settled in. 2 of the 3 sacks they gave up were in the first 2 series of this game, and then they kind of settled down. So for me, they just need to continue to build off of that. And I'm glad to see they settled down, because if they didn't, I don't know if you see this game going the way you did, because it was scary early on in this game. Trubisky dropping back, pressure in his face instantly. I thought we were going to be in for a very long night on offense. It wasn't a quick night by any means. There's still some things to work on, but overall, definitely something that we can build off of for sure. All right, that's going to do it for our discussion on the Bears' offense from this game. And before we go ahead and jump into the third quarter of the show and take a look at the Bears' defense, just a reminder that at the end of the show, Nick and I will take a couple of questions here from the live chat. Hold on to those until we get to the fourth quarter, because I'm not going to be able to see them in the flooded comments here. But this way you can kind of, you know, work on some of your questions by the time we get there. But let's go ahead, jump in, third quarter of the show, and break down that Bears defense today. That, again, the storyline is going to be the five turnovers on defense. I think I tweeted it, like, tonight we feast, and they definitely did. So, Nick, going over to you, in terms of these turnovers, what kind of stood out to you, and is it, do you like the aggressive mentality kind of coming back? Because it seemed like, you know, we couldn't really get there in week one. Last week, the big one was Kyle Fuller's interception, and now the Bears are returning to that aggressive mentality, getting these turnovers. And maybe all we needed was that big interception last week from Fuller to kind of break the seal a little bit. So what's your take on all these turnovers?
Well, Will, as you asked, I love it. I mean, that is clearly the strength of this team. That's what provided them with so much success last year. And to be honest, I wasn't too worried about it heading into week two and heading into tonight. I think that part of it was, you know, Pagano's play calling, adding some more blitzes with the talented pass rushers that they have, and quite simply capitalizing on mistakes from a guy like Case Keenum. I mean, that first interception, the pick six, that was 3 to 4 yards away from the intended target. When you have ball hawks and talent like HaHa Clinton Dix and Eddie Jackson, that's no surprise. Fuller has been doing this for multiple seasons now. And then, of course, the pass rushing, that's what it all starts with. Mm-hmm. I mean, Khalil Mack getting there, forcing the fumble, Trevathan doing that, it's literally all over. And there's a reason that this Bears defense is known as, you know, likely the best defense in the league, certainly the most talented. So I love it. I'm not surprised. I was impressed with, again, if I'm going to get down to the nitty-gritty, 85% to 90% of it. I think that they were playing a little too soft, as we kind of talked about in the chat, late in that third, early in the fourth. But I couldn't even put the blame completely on them when the offense couldn't stay on the field for 2 minutes at a time. So I'm not surprised. I think that the defense is going to be somewhere in between how they looked in week one and how they look tonight. Not every team is going to be putting, you know, Case Keenum and Joe Flacco back behind center, but it was certainly encouraging. And as Bear fans, that's what you need to see, and that's what you need to lean on for this team to be successful.
I think we need to start, when we're going to dive in a little deeper here, I believe we need to begin with that pass rush, because like you said, that's what this defense lives and dies by. And for the most part tonight, they did a really good job of just, you know, wreaking havoc in the pocket for Case Keenum, especially in the first half of this game. Yeah, the 8 quarterback hits, 4 sacks, they're all over the line of scrimmage, 3 tackles for a loss as well. This front 7 was dominant. But yet again, I say the entire front 7, and I'm going to give everyone their, you know, their due credit here, but Khalil Mack, I mean, he was just in, I forgot who tweeted, but said he was in God mode in the first half, like what we saw, you know, week one last season, what we've seen him do in, you know, countless primetime games. Khalil Mack, you know, getting in there, he's a football hunter. Every time he got near Case Keenum, he's swatting at that thing. A couple forced fumbles for him today. One was negated due to Prince Amukamara having, it was a soft penalty, but an illegal hands to the face penalty that kind of ruined that one, which I was a little mad at Prince for that one for a while, and maybe I still am, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. But overall, Khalil Mack, did you expect this type of game out of him? Because he's been someone who's been, this season, very effective, but not as flashy as we saw last season. And this is the game that I've been waiting to see out of Khalil Mack all year long.
To be quite honest with you, I kind of did expect it, simply because you knew he would have that opportunity tonight. And, you know, Bears fans could say it every single week, but thank God for that trade. I mean, he is one of the 5 or 6, I would say only 5 or 6 players in the whole league that can change a game by himself. Guys like him, Aaron Donald, you know, Mahomes. And when you see that production week in and week out, it's amazing from him, and it also opens things up for the defense. So I wasn't really surprised. It's amazing to see every week. And, you know, thank goodness there's talent around him so that he can get those rare breaks, because bringing a full blown pass rush, you know, just about every play, it certainly adds up. But that was huge. And, you know, he showed again why he is obviously the leader of the defense and a top three player in the whole NFL. And you knew both with the quarterback that the Redskins have, not having Trent Williams out there, not having a ton of talent on that offense, he would get that opportunity. And Pagano brought it tonight. The linebackers brought it. I'm sure we would have loved to, you know, have seen a sack from an emerging guy like Leonard Floyd or what have you. But it was a great night from Khalil Mack. And we're just blessed to see it every week, truly, for this defense. I mean, he is a single-handed game changer.
Oh, he is. I mean, you're looking at that he had a sack on the second drive and made it 3rd and 22. And then the next play, no one's going to remember it, but he got another pressure on Keenum. It was like on a long looping stunt, got right in his face, and he forced Keenum off his spot, and he had to throw that ball a little bit quicker, and you know they end up punting. And so like two plays in a row where he just totally blew up the entire drive.
And the holds that he forces too.
Absolutely. Well, when they call him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that changes because, like, you know, I would take a hold or a sack any day. If they're going to call a holding penalty, I mean, minus 10 yards, great. That's almost as good as a sack. You just don't have the loss of down. But Khalil Mack, again, he changes the game. The other strip sack that he had that the Bears actually did recover, the offense is starting at the 11-yard line. And that, you know, ended up being Trubisky's first touchdown. And that, you know, that works out in our favor. So, again, he's setting up the offense for success. And sometimes the offense needs to return the favor, especially later on in games, because again, they just haven't yet. But I just wanted to prove, you know, Khalil Mack, and that is how he changes the game. And we can talk about Khalil Mack for, you know, hours, but we have plenty of other guys to talk about. I do want to talk about the defensive line real quick, because, you know, Akeem Hicks, he exited the game with a knee injury that he's been kind of dealing with. Bilal Nichols is out with a broken hand. How comfortable would you be if Akeem Hicks had a miss next week against Minnesota? Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I have no idea the severity, and it's something that he's walking. He should be okay. I'm not going to speculate too far into that yet, but I'm just looking worst-case scenario. No Bilal Nichols, no Akeem Hicks going up against Minnesota. So you have to lean on guys like Eddie Goldman, Roy Robertson-Harris, Nick Williams, Abdullah Anderson. How confident would you be in that unit next week?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't be, you know, hitting the red panic button. But, yeah, I would put my confidence level, you know, several notches below, because this might be a take, and I love guys like Eddie Jackson and Kyle Fuller, but I think Akeem Hicks is the second most important player on this defense. Not only what he can do, but, again, like Khalil Mack, he attracts more attention. That opens things up for other pass rushers, other D linemen, and he's a guy that brings it every single play he's on the field. You never have to question his motor, just like Khalil Mack. So that would be a pretty big loss, especially against an offense like Minnesota that, you know, is throwing a little bit, running a ton, looks like it's hitting on really all cylinders, and that'd be a big loss. I certainly think that the Bears should still be able to win that game without him, but it would hurt. I mean, it would drop my confidence from probably a B to a C. I think he's a huge component to that defense. I mean, he showed it again tonight, and he finally is getting that recognition that he has in the last year or so. So that would be a pretty big loss to me, especially if they're without Hicks and Nichols.
Yeah, I mean, both guys are harder to replace. Probably Hicks a little bit more. Okay, a lot more, let's just be honest. A lot more than a Bilal Nichols. Not to put Nichols down, but just to the level of Akeem Hicks's play that he is. But yeah, I would be a little worried about that unit, especially in moments when the Bears like to give Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd a breather at the same time, which is still something I'm trying to figure out why they think that's a smart idea. Because anytime they do that and they put both Aaron Lynch and Isaiah Irving out there, the pass rush just disappears. And
you know, it's non-existent.
At least, I mean, today it was or was not. We've seen Lynch have some moments so far this season. But today, I mean, as soon as 52 and 94 are off, you start seeing Washington move the ball down the field and you're like, wait, what's happening? And then you realize that 99 and 47's out there, not 94 and 52. And you're like, oh, that makes sense. That's why Keenum feels comfortable. And when he gets comfortable and the Bears play soft, you know, they usually just move that ball, dink and dunk, and the Bears will bend. Today they broke a little bit more in the second half than I would have liked. But yeah, I would be a little worried if there's no Akeem Hicks, you know, going up against Minnesota. But moving over to, let's talk about some of the inside linebackers just real quick. Danny Trevathan, of course, he was part of my monster moment of the game. But I thought overall he had a pretty big day, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he was the most valuable bear to me. And it's just, more than anything, it's just kind of a relief. You know, when you're seeing what Mac can do, we've seen flashes from Floyd, and then you know that you have that talent on the inside as well, and somebody that you can also rely on. I mean, it's huge. Trevathan was big tonight. He was, you know, maybe the second or third best player overall after, you know, maybe Mac and HaHa, which was encouraging. I love what he can bring both on the field and off the field as a leadership component. He's a guy that, you know, like so many of these guys, loves his team, loves being in Chicago, and wants to do everything they possibly can. So when we're seeing this progress on the offense, we can't expect perfection from the defense. I mean, you simply can't. And the lackluster play in the third quarter was a little disappointing, but overall, very positive. And, you know, I'm not surprised to see it from the linebacking corps at all, especially those leaders. And we just have to hope that that can continue, because I think we will agree Minnesota's offense is certainly more potent than the Redskins and the Broncos. So that'll be something to keep our eyes on. But yeah, I loved what I saw out of Trevathan tonight, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, he was just all over the field, and you can tell he really brought that energy tonight, which I think Danny likes primetime games, just like a Khalil Mack. I think he likes having the
Kyle
spotlight
Fuller, you can
on
throw him.
Him
in there.
You can. I mean, this defense, I think they just like it because they get to showcase, you know, their ability and their prowess a little bit as well in the national light, which they usually tend to do as well. Looking at that secondary, though, I mean, we had an interception from Kyle Fuller, and then, of course, HaHa Clinton Dix, or HaHa Clinton Picks. He had two of those tonight.
Credit to you, not the Bears, right?
Well, someone said there apparently there was a tweet about it from the national, well, not the national championship game, but for the NFC championship game a year ago, or not, no, I don't know when it was, from the Eagles. I have no idea. But someone tweeted it, and they're like, oh, look, it happened last year. And I was like, what? I was like, fine, I don't care. And I'm not going to talk about this on the show, but we'll talk about this afterwards. But for me, when I'm looking at HaHa Clinton Dix, obviously his pick six was more of him being in that right spot in the overthrow. But Nick, I want to know if we're on the same page here. That very first series when we got that pick six, did you feel a turnover coming? Because every time that Keenum was throwing that ball, it just felt like it was getting popped out. It was just so close. And then finally it was an overthrow and we're able to capitalize. But I felt like in my gut that there's going to be some sort of turnover. I didn't know it was going to be points, but I just felt like the Bears were just, you know, very close of coming away with it a few times, and then finally they were able to kind of come away.
100%. I mean, after, you know, the Bears got the ball and didn't do anything with it, I actually said right away to people I was watching with, I think this is going to be a game where the Bears have to create for the offense. And then, you know, three or four plays later, they did, and that happened again and again and again. So that is what, you know, they signed Clinton Dix for, to go along with Eddie Jackson. I mean, he's certainly not known for his tackling ability or, you know, skill in the run game, but he is a ball hawk. And that was encouraging for him to see, and then to do it again. And Kyle Fuller, I mean, even Prince, I think that he had that, you know, penalty which hurt. But overall, until they were doing that, you know, late game prevent type defense, I think that it was a very solid game from the secondary. I really do.
The only other thing on Prince, he did have the two penalties. One did take away the fumble, like I mentioned. Then the Washington second touchdown is that rub play onto the top of our screen. And I don't know if that was a miscommunication, but it just seemed like he accepted the fate of that touchdown and just kind of stopped. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I don't know if they're supposed to switch. Maybe that was the case. Roquan did come in a little late to get over to that side when they had some trips over there. But that's something I want to look back at before I put, you know, full blame. But at the moment, as of right now, I was wondering, like, what the heck happened and why weren't you trying to cover that receiver? So we'll see how that comes out. But that was another play that I did jot down for Prince. Something we do need to mention, though, about the defense, and we can talk about all the positives, but there were a few negatives, and that was when you're looking at the first half of this game, all of the penalties that were preventing this defense from just getting off the field. They had three in that one possession, two of which were on third down that extended that drive. I mean, we can talk about, you know, what the Bears need to do to clean it up, but really, Nick, doesn't it just come down to playing disciplined football?
100%. I mean, it's simple execution and just following the rules. I mean, it was a lot of, you mentioned the Prince penalty, and then, you know, encroachment, offsides. That can't happen with a top level caliber defense. It just can't. So I think it's something that's, you know, that's one of the easy things to clean up in football, especially on that side of the ball. Just don't, you know, inaccurately jump the snap count, or just, you know, don't be undisciplined. And that's something I'm sure they'll harp on, because Washington is, they're just not a good football team, and the Bears could have won by even more. But I think that if there was a problem that you have to look at, I think that's an easy one to clean up. And overall, I think we'd both be pretty encouraged by the defensive effort tonight, for sure.
I like that, Boog on Monday Night Football, the announcer, at one point, he's like, you know, the Bears' defense is great, and this, you know, they're really good, and they can do a lot of these awesome things. But then they jump the snap, and they're offsides, and got mad about it. And I was like, that's when you know you're nitpicking. Like, they're being aggressive, and they're trying to jump this snap, and they get called for it a couple of times, but... And that's what you want to harp on. Okay, fine. I mean, that's the least of our problems. Because to me, in a game like today, in which there was an extended lead and they're still trying to be aggressive with that pass rush, if they're trying to jump the snap and once or twice it doesn't work in our favor, I'll eat the 10 yards. But in general, I do agree with you. Like the penalties on like the DBs, Prince in particular, those need to be cleaned up. Like, you can't put your hand on the guy's face mask. You just can't do it. They're going to see it every time. They're going to call it. But the other ones, when they're just trying to jump the snap, yeah, I'm not too worried about those. I'm pretty excited by it. Like, what Khalil Mack tried. Oops. Like, I almost like tweeted like that bum. But like, yeah, sarcastically, I was like, no, it's fine. He can do that. Any final thoughts on this defense? Anything that you hope they can build off of? Obviously, to me, the easy answer is turnovers. Hopefully they can continue. I mean, I wish I can say hopefully they can continue to get 5 every game. We know that's not realistic, but hopefully this is the beginning of multiple turnover games, you know, consistently like we saw last season. That, and I still want to see more of a, you know, more consistent pass rush in the second half of games. 2 weeks in a row where it came early and it disappeared. And I don't want it to disappear. I don't want teams to fight their way back into some of these games. I hope that if we have a 5-point lead heading into the locker room at halftime.
28.
I thought it was 28.
Oh, 20. Yep. 28-3 right before. Yep.
All right. So math, 25. So for me, I thought that would be, you know, a safe lead. And then it didn't feel like it for the most part of that second half. And again, there's a lot of issues there on both sides of the ball. But overall, I still want to see that pass rush hit home in the second half of these games, which still can come back to the offense of getting this defense some time to breathe, like I think you mentioned earlier in the show as well, Nick. But going back to you, any final thoughts on this defense from this game?
I think, yeah, obviously you can't expect, you know, 3, 4, 5 takeaways every game. So I think the biggest thing to me would be the pass rush. I mean, that's kind of what creates all of it. Sacks are great. The holding penalties that are possible, forced fumbles. And when there's more of a pass rush, it's more likely to create an interception as well. And that kind of leads everything. So hopefully we can see more production out of guys like Leonard Floyd, the continued, you know, success and domination from Khalil Mack. But definitely the pass rush, because that kind of leads everything. And then, you know, if you want to get nitpicky with big leads, maybe not give so much, you know, yardage off the receivers, because that does add up. And against a better offense and a better team, that will come back to hurt you. But overall, definitely a good performance.
All right, let's jump into the fourth quarter of the show. And this is now time, if you want to start throwing in some questions in the chat, I encourage you to do so. But before we answer those, we do need to talk a little bit about some special teams today. A few observations. One, Eddie Pinheiro, obviously he still battled it out with that knee injury. We've been keeping tabs on that over the weekend. I don't think this came out before our preview show, so it's something that we've been internally keeping tabs on. But, you know, he has a pinched nerve in his knee, I believe that's what it is. And obviously that had a little bit of an impact. He missed one field goal today, but still 1 of 2. He was able to hit all those extra points, but he's out there and he is, you know, he has some heart to him because he's having to walk to his spot. He's, you know, doing a light limping jog and he's still out there, you know, drilling these kicks. And reporters are tweeting that during like these breaks, he's out there still practicing field goals in the net. So he's still not taking it easy by any means. He's still going through his typical game process besides a bum knee, which to me is still a damn shame that this has to happen right now in our season with him. But it seems like he's a fighter. He's going to get through this, and I think he's going to be better for it. So what's your take on Eddie Pinheiro today, Nick? Because at one hand, I am very proud of, the courage that he had to use today to be out there. He didn't have kickoff duties. But on the other hand, with the Bears, with the lead that they had, I don't know if you have him out there kicking field goals. That seems like you're putting him in a spot to expose him to, any greater injury. What's your take? Because it can go either way here.
Well, you know what he is, Will? I mean, you mentioned Hart. He's the anti-Cody Parkey.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, Parkey, he wouldn't go to Soldier Field. He wouldn't practice the kicks. It was just, just a job for him. Pinheiro has fought so hard to get to where he is, and he clearly actually really cares and wants to help and succeed for this team. So I want to say that right away. And I think, yeah, if it was closer, I mean, maybe you trot him out there and see if he can hit one, give you the lead. I don't think he needed to be out there tonight. I'm hoping that he didn't aggravate it at all, but it was certainly encouraging to see him hit the extra points and then that second field goal attempt. So I think he just needs to take it easy. I mean, he's obviously trying to rehab and, get back at healthy as soon as he can. It really does kind of stink that it happened right after he had this hero moment a week ago and everybody knows who he is. But if he can deal with this, he's dealt with many bigger things in his life. Get back quickly, hopefully the team can continue to build leads like this, then I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, I saw a question. One of the questions from the chat was asking if we would have had him out there or not. And like I said, it can go either way. And I'm going to say I would have had him out there if I were the coaches as well, only if, and I'm assuming this was the case, that they asked him, you want to go out there? Can you do this? Are you fine with it? And he says, yes, coach, put me in. If that's the case, fine, put him out there. But if he's like, I don't know, maybe the knee's going to fall off, and you say, nope, you're going out there anyway, that's a mistake. But if there was open communication between, Coach Tabor, Eddie, Coach Nagy, about all these decisions, and this, Eddie said, yeah, I can handle it, don't worry about me. Fine, I have no problems with it. I understand that maybe it does expose him to further injury. Maybe it doesn't. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't have a medical degree. I'm just a guy running a podcast talking about the Chicago Bears. So for me, it's whatever they came up with this decision, and I don't think it was a one person making this decision. And I'll bet you any amount of money, Eddie said, I'm fine. I'm good enough to at least, do these kicks, and they had to have asked them. So to me, I'm okay with it. But any other special teams observations outside of Eddie? I'm glad that we only saw O'Donnell three times tonight. Obviously, the least amount of appearances for him is better for us in our offense. So three punts from him today. In terms of kick returns, Cordero Patterson averaged 26. We had one punt return from Tariq, and it was like 3 yards, so nothing to write home about. Any observations? Do you miss Sherrick McManus as much as I do on some of these coverage units?
Well, on Pinheiro, I think that you're right. I totally agree, and I'm sure that he did give them the go-ahead. I mean, this is coming from a guy that, was on the sidelines last week praying that he got the shot to hit the game winner last week. So I'm sure that he wanted to give it a go if he could. So I agree with you there. And I would say, yeah, the returns, although I think a touchback is solid when you can take one, I think that Cordero Patterson looked good back there, and it's always good when you don't need to see O'Donnell too much. I mean, as much as we love him, it's successful for the team when he's not out there as much, and would have seen him even less if Pinheiro could have been doing the kickoff. So I think it was, yeah, I'd probably give special teams a B or B plus tonight. I think all three phases were not perfect. You can fix things on all of them, but pretty solid, obviously enough to win tonight.
Yeah, and one last thing. We talked about special teams, but we are talking about special teams, and I talked about Pat O'Donnell not being in there in terms of punting a lot, but a shout out to him for handling kickoff duties and doing them very well. I did not really anticipate that. Like, I saw Patrick Finley tweeting, oh, and we're going to have O'Donnell doing kickoffs. I'm like, oh, that may not be good, but it was like a non-issue. So that's good to know that you could have that in our back pocket as a worst case scenario, that he does have that ability as well. So shout out to Mega Punt for being Mega Kickoff, I guess. There was a touchback or two from him as well. Let's get into some fan questions. I was very excited to get a few of these, a lot of them about Mitch. But one that I saw is about the offensive line. It comes from Urbanetti on YouTube, and he wants to know, can this offensive line play, take this team to an NFC Championship game? What do you think, Nick? I don't think this is the level of play that they need to be at in order to reach the NFC Championship. I believe they have to clean up a multitude of things and become more cohesive as a unit before I can really get behind that starting five as a unit that can take us to at least an NFC Championship game.
I love the question. I think that you've got to keep in mind they were missing Massey tonight. And I think you'd probably agree. I think that they have the capability, but no. What we saw tonight would not get there. Both the penalties and the inability to block so well in the run game for a while. I mean, when they finally were given Montgomery the ball, the first three or four times, he didn't really have holes to get to. And we know that he hits those holes pretty hard. So I love that. The question, I don't think it would be the biggest hindrance to this team right now to not, be so successful and get to an NFC Championship game. But I don't think they're quite there. I think, again, it's smaller things to clean up. But then again, in the trenches, small things, low man wins, staying clean, that kind of stuff will win games and win the battle in the trenches.
All right, another question, and I lost it. Again, when the chat floods, it floods. But I remember the question. And, Nick, I'll take it right to you first. Do you believe that the inexperience that Mitch has, whether it be college or lack of preseason this year, is the contributor or, one of the factors behind some of his early struggles this season? Or do you believe that that's something that doesn't weigh too much into the, whole early season struggles? Because I see it both ways. To me, I think it's more the preseason than really his lack of college experience. I think now in year three, you're really hoping that that lack of college experience isn't coming back now, right?
Yeah, again, fantastic question. I actually thought about that during the game when they showed, that graphic of how many starts some of these rookie quarterbacks have had in college. And I thought, yeah, Mitch didn't get a lot of those, but that was also three and a half years ago. So I don't think that that's as big of an issue right now. I mean, it could have been last year, maybe 2 years ago. I agree about the preseason, and I think quite simply he needs to clean up some of his mechanics, like you mentioned, and some of the decision-making. But no, I don't really think his lack of starts as a Tar Heel have really hurt him as a Chicago Bear, certainly not in year three and year two under Nagy with so many of the same weapons.
My thought process about Mitch would be if it was a lack of college experience, I think we would have seen that last year. Because year one with John Fox, I almost kind of call that almost extra college experience in a way, or just his first glimpse in the NFL, because that doesn't really count. But what he was able to do last year to me proved that he's able to overcome the college experience. What I believe a lot of the issues come from, one, he was a little bit rusty, no preseason, and I think Mitch is a guy that needs a lot of reps just to kind of get into a groove and get in some confidence, get in rhythm. Secondly, everyone had a whole offseason to figure out what Mitch did well last year, an entire offseason to scout him. What does he do well? When does he struggle? And they got all the tape on him, and they adjusted. They have game plans that are tailored to what he did last season. And I think that Coach Nagy didn't expect it to be as great as it was, and I think Mitch is having a hard time adjusting to some of the adjustments that the defense made against him. So now it's like chess. Now it's time for him to counter. And hopefully tonight, and I get it was a very poorest defense that Washington's had, but hopefully that's a performance that he can build on, get some confidence, and move forward with as well. So for me, it really comes down to Mitch and his ability to now, make that move, like prove, okay, you can counter me, but now I'm not going to counter you, and I'm going to find new ways to beat you, because they've taken away his ability to scramble with how they've been spying on him. They've been, taking away his first read, and they know he struggles when he has to move off of that. So for me, it's really Mitch's time to prove that he can take that next step and beat the defense adjustments. And then from there, I think it's game on, because then you never know what you're going to do each and every week. Looking here at the questions, there's a bunch of them coming onto this thing right now. One comes from Alexi Scott. Nick, this is actually a really good question. Do you believe it's time to stop using Tariq Cohen as a third and short running back? I'm ready for David Montgomery 100% of the time. You could put Tariq Cohen in the slot, I don't mind, but in terms of being in the backfield, to me, David Montgomery should be handling all of those carries.
100%. And I thought about that. I think they ran him, yeah, on like a third and two. He's incredibly talented. You know, Tariq needs to get the ball. That's not where you give it to him. You know, maybe a second and short, maybe, but third and short when you need to get that, yeah, use a bigger back like Montgomery. I even like Cordarrelle Patterson better there than Tariq Cohen. I mean, you need bigger guys that can hold on to the ball, get those yards you need, and that's just, it's not a strength of Tariq. We've never really seen that from him. And that's kind of the area where we're talking about. Did Nagy's play calling improve tonight? Yes. Are there areas when he can improve even more? Absolutely. So I don't completely understand that. I like that question. And I'm hoping that we don't see a lot more of that because it's just simply not beneficial for this offense.
All right, last one from our chat. It's actually going to come from a mixture of our moderator, Tristan, and then one of our regulars in the chat, Cliff. And they both asked the same question but in different ways. So I'll frame it to you, Nick, as what's the Bears' biggest need right now on the team?
That's a great one. I think that it is consistency on offense, and that comes from balance of play calling. I mean, we saw polar opposites in week one and week two. The second half tonight was a little more balanced, but I think it comes from there. Execution, you know, not getting those stupid penalties and cutting down turnovers. I mean, yeah, there weren't a ton tonight, but there shouldn't have been any for this offense. And that's what will keep this from being, you know, a solid team. Everybody knows great defense, offense struggles, to a great team and a contender, which they appeared to be at the end of last season and everyone hoped for this year, including, you know, us and our staff. And I still believe that they can get there. I mean, 2-1 with a home game this weekend, I definitely do. But that's what's going to hinder them from either getting there or falling short like that Jaguars team that they've often been compared to from the national media. So I think that's probably what it'll come down to. And I think for the most part, tonight was a step in the right direction.
For sure. All right, let's go ahead. Let's grade this game. This is something that, you know, me being out of the flow of post-game shows for not doing them since January, I just realized earlier this week that I have not done this segment, and I love this segment. I love breaking out the red pen and grading the Bears' performance each and every week. So for me, I'll go ahead. I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to give this game a B. I think a solid B. I was going to say B to B plus, but I think that there's still a lot to be worked on. I think B plus to be generous just because it's late. They won. So for me, I'll just give it a B. We talked about the Bears, how they need to be more consistent on offense. They need to be more well-rounded, especially in the second half of games. And then the defense as well. I mean, you love the turnovers. You love the pass rush early. And maybe they can find ways to be a little bit more consistent, not go to a complete prevent right away. I think that Chuck Pagano is a little bit too soft in that regard at times. I thought those were things that, with Vic Fangio gone, we're going to not have anymore. But yet, the same issue persists here. I understand you don't want to give up the big play, but if you're going to have a 20-yard cushion, they're going to eat you alive, and that's not really going to do you any favors whatsoever as well. So for me, I'll give this a B, a gutsy performance from Eddie Pinheiro as well. But I think a B is a good point to kind of put this one down on. What about you, Nick? If you had to grade the entire team as a whole, what letter grade would you give them and why?
Well, now that we've been breaking it down, I've kind of got my pessimist hat on because I know what this team is capable of. So I think I would give them a B minus at best. I mean, the first half, A plus, but there were 10 to 12 minutes in the second half where they looked like, you know, an NFC North seller team. I mean, you know, at the bottom of that, just because we know how much talent there is. I hate the prevent defense, especially when you don't need to play it, especially with, you know, all of that depth and I guess being veterans on the defense. And then the offense, I mean, it was easy plays for Mitch and his stats look great, but there are ways when he can improve. Montgomery needs the ball. I personally like some more misdirection and sweeps to guys like Miller and Gabriel, so I think that can be improved. And then, I mean, if we're going to be nitpicky, the penalties could be cleaned up as well. So it's a win. 2-1 looks a lot better than 1-2, but, you know, the Redskins are a team that could maybe win two games this year. So the Bears probably could have won by, you know, the 25-point margin that they had in the first half. And I'm sure Nagy and the coaching staff, Pagano, will get on them this week. But overall, probably about a B minus, you know, good, above average, but not great. And that's what this team was aspiring to be, right?
Exactly. And hopefully Pagano gets on himself. And on top of that, I don't know what jacket that they have in the sidelines, but I saw Pagano wearing it. That's what dawned on me. But they need to find a way to put that in the fan store, because I would rock that thing here on these post-game shows, because those are really sweet. But I do want to play a fun game, and I don't usually do things like this, but real quick, you gave them a B-. If that game stopped at halftime, and I know a game's four quarters, and I'm not saying that, you know, they don't need to do a complete game. I think I made that clear that I want them to play all four quarters. But at halftime, I think there are still some good and bad. So what would you would have given them for a grade at the half? Because you were calling it a blowout win.
I would say, yeah, it was. Sorry, folks, we're almost costing them. I would say A-. If it was against a good team, probably an A. But because we knew that, you know, the Redskins aren't good, the Bears were fairly heavy favorites, especially for a road team in the NFL. And I think that, yeah, Mitch could have been, he could have been 22 for 23 at half. So if we're breaking it down, I think that could have been a little better. The penalties, and then, quite frankly, the Redskins shouldn't have had a point in the first two quarters. So probably an A-, still awesome, but a couple areas to improve.
Absolutely agreed. All right, it's time to enter our two-minute warning. This is where we wrap up our thoughts on this game and put them into a season, you know, perspective as we look forward to next week against Minnesota, a big NFC North game coming up, a division that's looking really strong here in the first 3 weeks of the season. So, Nick, over to you, your first ever two-minute warning. Take it away.
Big time. I think that, yeah, the Bears have to clean those things up that we mentioned. I mean, we knew that the Bears, Packers, and Vikings would all be competing. But the Lions look a little bit better, too, especially on the defensive end. So I think that we saw a lot of good things, especially behind center. Certainly encouraging for Mitch. I think that he needs to elevate that status a little more. You know, I loved what you said about countering earlier. Every time he steps to the line, it's a chess match. Mm-hmm. You know, and we saw a lot of those between Aaron Rodgers and Brian Urlacher throughout our years being Bears fans. He might never get there, but being able to change things at the line and adjust to what he and the offense needs, I think that's something they can hit on. I think relying on that run game and just cutting down those stupid penalties. I mean, that's not going to fly in this division, especially what we foresee being a lot of close games. I mean, as badly as the Bears looked in week one, that was a close, winnable game. The Bears should have a lot of those with this all-world defense that they're capable of having. So I think those are some big things that they can improve on. And I think if they do that, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I think we'll see the NFC North contending, maybe NFC contending team that we had hoped to see. I mean, I think that's fair to say after having a defense like this for a year and a half now.
Wow, you started the show so optimistic, and I think you're still being optimistic, but I just saw one comment in the chat that you're bringing down the vibe, Nick.
Oh, wow.
People just let it all out in the chat.
But I'm not used to that, but I appreciate it. I mean, I know that I'm definitely an optimist, and you know, I think it's a good sign, because coming into this week, I thought, yeah, should be a win, 2-1, but I know what this team's capable of, and I think that the biggest fans and the people that follow football as closely will hopefully see that and agree that there are a couple steps to climb to get where they were hoping. I mean, I know, you know, people like you and some other writers thought that they had Super Bowl aspirations, and those are just things that you don't see from teams like the Patriots. So that's interesting. I appreciate the honesty.
I mean, I figured you'd like to know. I mean, I don't mind. I mean, the part of this show, right? Like, you have to be an optimist, but also at the same time, keep yourself in check. And that's been a balance that now this is season five for us. It's been, you know, it takes some time to kind of get into that groove, but with that, I'll jump right into my two-minute warning, which is going to be towing along the same line. There's so much that you can like in that first half. You have Khalil Mack going into God mode yet again, just taking Case Keenum and just putting him to the turf countless times, making his clock speed up just a little bit quicker. And then the secondary getting really aggressive, being an opportunistic secondary that we saw a year ago. We saw that Ha Ha Clinton Dix is better than Adrian Amos, something that we already knew, but we were able to see that a little bit tonight. And to me, that, you know, puts a little bit of a smile on my face as well. I think I saw someone tweet like, Amos takes that to the house twice in one play. I'm like, ha. But anyway, looking at this defense, I mean, you love what they're doing. It wasn't even a great night for a Roquan Smith. Like, we didn't even really talk about him, but it doesn't mean he had a bad game. He just didn't have his type of opportunities, because when the, you know, Washington was trying to run that ball, it was Danny Trevathan. The defensive line was doing a pretty good job too as well, and Roquan didn't need to be as heavily called upon as he was in week one or even last week against Denver as well. But there's so much on that defense that just gets you excited. And as much as you and I were harping on, you know, that prevent defense in the second half of games, I mean, A, you can look at the offense and say you need to give them more of a breather. B, that's more on the coaching, and that's something that I still think needs to be thought over twice. But at the same time, we're still on the winning side of things tonight, so that's all right. And then on offense, Mitch has 3 first-half touchdowns after not having any in the entire season so far. And again, it was Washington. He had a short field on one of them. But that one throw to Taylor Gabriel is that special throw that gets you excited about what Mitch can be when he is his best self. And I think that play, I don't know if it reminded you a lot, Nick, about the end of the Denver game, but how he had to evade the pressure and step up and just make a big throw on the run. That just reminded me of that, and that's the best Mitch, and hopefully he can continue to build off that, because that's 2 weeks in a row with some 2 special throws from number 10. And even though it wasn't a perfect game from him in terms of, you know, just a couple missed throws, I think when you're looking at Mitch and we talk about a couple missed throws, I think that's when we get a little over scrutinizing, because for the most part, I mean, even some of his completions could have had better ball placement, but he still completed the pass. He still moved the sticks. He still found his way into the end zone today. So for me, lots to be excited about, some things that still kind of want to keep us grounded. But overall, this is the best I felt after a Bears game this season. I don't know if that's saying a lot or not. Well, it's only week 3, so plenty of time to figure that one out. But for me, I'm very excited for what's to come. But we have a short week. We have a divisional opponent coming into Soldier Field. The NFC North is pretty tough, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm excited to break it all down this week to preview that for you all. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Chicago Water Bowl. Nick, real quick, before we end the show, thoughts on your debut?
I think it went pretty well. I'm very excited to be here. I just wanted to add that Trubisky throw kind of reminded me of his throw at the end of the playoff game, which put, that you know, too, the Bears in that mm-hmm. position. That's where it had me. And hey, I mean, Will, you know, Nick, everybody knows I'm an optimist at heart. So if I can bring that out even more, that'd be great. But I love this podcast. I'm very honored to have been on, and I hope you all enjoyed.
Now, what was more exciting, this or your big interview at ESPN today?
More exciting? Probably.
Don't do you better. You better. They're watching. You better say ESPN. Like, I want you to get that job.
It was a tie. I was very excited both. But, you know, one was a bit more nerve-wracking than the other. So it was an awesome day, and I'm very happy and blessed to have been on. So thank you.
You know what, though? After your tweet, the Bears were going to challenge you on which one is going to be more nerve-wracking after a while, it felt like. Thanks, Danny Trevathan.
Yep, some scary tweets and threats may be coming my way. But, hey, they got the W, and 2-1 is pretty good after 3 weeks.
You know what? I think you said it best, right? 2-1 looks so much different, feels so much different than 1-2. 1-2, you're focusing on everything negative. What went wrong? Why is this team not winning? To, you know what? 2-1, it may not be pretty, but we're still finding ways to win. And that is, to me, Chicago Bears football at its best. It doesn't really ever get pretty wins or stress-free wins. That's not the Chicago Bears way. And I think most people listening couldn't understand that feeling of every game, they want to make it stressful or find ways to make you want to rip your hair out. I'm sure that the gray hairs that are starting to sprout up on my head are probably due to them, maybe due to my son, maybe due to just life in general, who knows. But all right, let's kind of wrap this up. It is 12:40 a.m. for me, and I have to get up early for work. Lucky guy. All right, I want to thank everyone for tuning into this show. Again, whether you watch the show here on YouTube, Facebook Live, Periscope, or if you're amongst the thousands of global listeners of the podcast, we really do appreciate each and every one of you. We'll be back next time. I actually have the interview to meet the Vikings tomorrow afternoon. So, you know, quick turnaround here for me and a short week as well. So we'll go ahead and Sam Ekstrom's going to be our guest. So look for that interview to drop maybe Wednesday morning, Tuesday night. We'll see how I feel about it. But regardless of when that drops, I'll talk to you next time. And until then, bear down, Chicago.